Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Sportland Training and Fitness Sports Talks Podcast, the people behind the posts. Now, constantly, over the last 2 or 3 years, all we've heard of is what people are doing in their day-to-day life, in the gym, in their business, and everyone's coming up pretty much with the same things. And you know what? I'm a little bit bored of that. So what I'm here to do is to find out the reasons why people are doing what they're doing. Find out what has scared them. Find out what's put them outside their comfort zone. Find out really what makes them tick, because that's where the magic happens. That's what's exciting, and that's what's going to help you, and it's going to help me push forward in our careers. And you know what? Just have a little bit of a conversation as well while we're at it, because at the end of the day, I listen to these in my car. I want to be entertained. So maybe I can help entertain you.
Now, we both know this is the bit that we all hate in the beginning of podcasts. It's time for the sponsorship. However, don't skip it. Sit tight and listen, because I've got a couple of cool things for you. This podcast is sponsored by Team Builder. Team Builder is the world's top software for strength and conditioning coaches for writing training programs online. From the US to Australia to the UK, Team Builder works with the top professional teams, including a majority of the Premier League, as well as any level below. Right now, if you use the code SPORTLAND when you start a free trial and gain access to complimentary exercise videos and training templates as part of your trial. You can even keep the programs when you purchase a subscription. So go to teambuilder.com to learn more. Now, teambuilder.com is teambuilder.com. This software is cool, and not only for online, it's going to help you organize and structure your teams so much easier. It's paperless. You've got all your wellness reports in there. You've got all your monitoring. You've got all your speed, conditioning. It's a real nice tool, which is going to cut out all those files and paperwork and clunky Excel spreadsheets for you. So check it out. Also, now what I need to talk to you about is the Strength Coach Network. The Strength Coach Network has been set up by Keir Wenham Flat, the rugby strength coach, and Jada Mayo of the Central Virginia Sports Performance Podcast and Seminars, CVAS for short. This website is the number one place in the world or the universe where you can find the best training, advice, talking to coaches, communicating with people that probably wouldn't answer an email or a cold call from you. So what you need to do is go over there. There's hundreds of lectures from Brian Mann, myself, Keir, Henk Krejcinov, Dr. Michael Yeses, Buddy Morris, you name it, it's on there. Get yourself over there and check it out. There's a link in the bio that's going to give you 2 days trial for a dollar. 2 days for a dollar to get inside that program. And you can see that it's going to be the best investment that you've made for your career at developing yourself as a strength and conditioning coach. I'm on it. I'm watching the lectures every week and talking to people and making stuff happen. So head over to the bio. Check out the links. Team Builder is a promo code SPORTLAND. And also Strength Coach Network. Check the link in the bio. Now time for the podcast. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Sports Talks podcast. I'm your host, Sam Portland, and this is Understanding the People Behind the Post. Right now we're switching gears, okay? We've got the first quote-unquote rugby coach on the podcast in Warren Abrahams. This guy's an absolute G. The stuff that we get into and everything that we talk about is amazing and so transferable, it is legit. To the point where I actually talked to him and used the term rugby coach to him, and he called me out on it. He called me out on it saying, hang on a minute, I'm just a coach. And I think that is awesome. That's epic. That's what I love about this podcast and be able to have these conversations for you. And I do my best to try and dig deep and also just shoot the shit at the same time. Because let's be honest, no one likes a boring podcast. So what you can do with Warren as well, if you're interested in working with him as a player or as a coach, he does provide mentorship programs. So get in contact with him, pick up the phone, have a chat with him, grab a coffee And you won't be disappointed. He's got great experience and a really useful insight that the modern day coaching structures need, because it's full of dinosaurs, donkeys and donuts that we need to clear out and we need to get things moving. So I'm going to jump in. I've said my bit. I've probably pissed some people off already, but let's get into this podcast and you can enjoy yourself. Also, you know, I am a solo practitioner now, so give it a rating. Give this a share, please. And 5-star this motherfucker, and we can get this thing moving. Also, if you're a coach and you want to be on this podcast, message me, because I'll have you on. I'll talk to anyone, anywhere, anytime. If you've got something to say, then you better get on this podcast and say it. So for now, Sam Portland out, introducing Warren Abrahams.
Can you hear me fine, yeah?
Yeah, loud and clear. So, hey everyone, welcome back to the Sports Talks podcast. I am your host, Sam Portland, and this is Understanding the People Behind the Posts. I am delighted for another debut. We had our first doctor a couple of weeks ago, and now I have my first technical coach on the podcast. Like I said, I hate S&C podcasts, performance podcasts, because they're boring. So we're trying to diversify it and bring in all different people and all different opinions. So today on the show, we have Warren Abrahams. So welcome, Warren. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much. So I'm going to probably jump straight in and go technical coach. I'd probably say I am a rugby coach who love making people better.
There we go. There we go. So corrected already. Here we go. So Warren, obviously, you know, being first like rugby coach on the podcast, and this is all about storytelling. So tell that story of how you got to where you are now and what's on the horizons in the future.
I'd like to think it's an interesting story. Originally from South Africa, as you can probably tell from the accent. Been in the country for about 12 years now, so I'm officially a plastic Brit as well. Thank you very much. So, yeah, look, I took a risk about 12 years ago. Had a little bit of savings in South Africa. Rugby career wasn't going as I wanted it to go at the time. So a bit naive, immature, young, had a little bit of savings. Like I said, jumped on a plane, promised my parents everything was fine. But I remember sitting on a plane thinking, what the hell am I going to do? but look, yeah, so I arrived over here and like with anything with the rugby family, people look after you if you align yourself with some good people. And I found myself over here. Had to travel back and forth to South Africa for the first 2-3 years because of visas. Ideally wanted to play professional rugby, but like I said, I was naive, immature, young, so came over with the wrong visas. end up playing in the national leagues. Had some good people at Windsor Rugby Club looking after me. From there, I went to Maidenhead Rugby Club. Again, some really good people looking after me. And that's how I've always been passionate about the coaching side of things as well. Yeah. So picked up a little coaching job through the way, went through various different schools. I'll try and keep it as brief as I can. I went through various schools, pick up various coaching roles. I'm quite lucky playing full-time in South Africa. I was coaching as well, so I picked up a lot of sort of coaching experience that way. But officially, in 2011, I got an opportunity with Harlequins. Had to start in their community department, so I had to find my way into the elite environment, so I progressed really well. Alongside that, I coached Lithuania for 2 years. That was an interesting story as well. I didn't even know where the country was when I got the phone call.
Yeah, I'm there. Where am I going?
But I went over, I gambled, took another risk. Quickly realized I was the only black man in the country as well. got some interesting looks. But now, look, that led into the England Sevens. So I've been with England Sevens now for 4 years. Like I said, I've been with Harlequins for 8 seasons, just recently left there a couple of weeks ago. And in between, I coached some top teams in South Africa and had a brief stint with North Otago in New Zealand. So yeah, quite, and that's sort of how it all developed. Had to from that very first day when I turned up and I had nothing sorted. I had to take a lot of risk. I had to work extremely hard, and I had to learn some tough lessons through the coaching route. Like I said, the rugby at the time didn't quite work out as I wanted it to work out. But along the line, I managed to get a bit of interest around the South Africa Sevens, been in and around that. Had a little stint at Richmond Rugby Club as well. But I officially had to hang the boots up because the body didn't want to work as it should work anymore. And yeah, now I'm just focused on the coaching side at the minute. One of the senior coaches at England Sevens, and I also recently started sort of my own coaching business, coaching consultancy business, with Coaching for Potential, where I mentor coaches, deliver a range of different coaching workshops, and quite a big online presence where I just try and share as much as I can share with coaches, and then yeah, just try and spread a bit of the magic and help and support people. Yeah, that's in a nutshell, that's sort of how I got to where I'm.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's honestly, I didn't know what I expected, but that's not what I expected. That's cool. So you were playing full time back home.
Yeah.
So were you with one of the provinces?
Yeah, so I'm from Cape Town originally, so was in and around Western Province, was at on a scholarship with Stellenbosch University, one of the biggest, so Marty's Rugby, one of the biggest, probably produced one of the most, universities that produced the most Springboks in South Africa. Wow. So I was lucky to be on a scholarship there. I also played my club rugby at Durbanville Bellville, which is the national, they were the national club champions in South Africa. So yeah, that's sort of where I've got most of the rugby experience in South Africa.
That's cool. And I think, you know, to be going through that story as well and to be coaching with, you said you had some stints with the Sevens, South Africa Sevens, but then obviously with England Sevens now for a while and coaching at the professional level, there's a lot of technical coaches and a lot of coaches listening that thinks, you know, and I did to a degree, it's like you've got a lot of coaches that professional players that transition out of the game looking for coaching jobs, and we all know that there's jobs for the boys, and that happens quite a lot. But do you, you know, coming through, and like you mentioned clubs like Windsor, it's just around the corner from my house, Maidenhead Rugby Club as well, you know, these grassroots clubs where, you know, you've worked your way through coaching, that's quite refreshing to hear, because you'd get someone like yourself or a rugby coach, they do like master classes, like professional coach comes to do master class, but what you'll probably find and is that context is so huge in 100%. All of this, like what you're trying to deliver when you're coaching, and I like, it's like you're going to deliver, for me, you're going to deliver speed to an American football player differently to I deliver to a rugby player, to a rugby sevens player type thing. So it's quite interesting, how has your context of the way that you coach shaped and changed within all those different environments that you've been within?
Yeah, it's been fascinating. Obviously, coming from South Africa, where you've got notoriously, you've got a certain way of coaching, a way of coaching rugby in particular, because it's very structured and rigid and drill-based. So for instance, how I coach back then versus the way I coach now is a total difference. And then obviously, being involved then with all these other different countries, from South Africa to Lithuania to having a taste in New Zealand, coaching in England. So you almost had to sit down and refine and think about the best way of making people better. And it's a bit of everything. You got to take a little bit of everything. So in the performance space, you look at where I had to progress through academy coaching young people versus coaching adults versus then coaching a grassroots rugby club adults and then jumping into coaching kids. There's a complete difference of how you approach versus the conversations you have with certain individuals. However, the how of coaching remains the same. Your language and the conversation change a little bit, but it's ultimately I coach because I want to inspire and develop people. So that's my ultimate why. So I'm going to find a way to coach that particular individual, to improve that particular individual. And you might have to flex things a little bit to try and find the best way to get to that particular individual. But ultimately, I look back in terms of my journey to where I am now, and I'm actually grateful for all those little sessions. I remember right back in when I started at Harlequins, I had to run the HITCH program, which is a social inclusion program. And I'd find myself on a Friday night, I find myself on a council estate trying to use rugby as a vehicle to reduce antisocial behavior. But I had to come up with some creative games within the football dome, which is hard concrete with a rugby ball, to just get like 15, 20 of the kids off the estate to come and be involved in our session. But for me now, that is shaping the way I think about coaching now, because that is the backyard game stuff, all that creative things I had to come up with, that is shaping now how I deliver in the professional game. But yeah, no, all those diverse things I think has shaped me into a well-versed coach at the minute. So I'm very grateful for that. Long-winded answer, I hope I got to the point there.
Yeah, that is good, mate. Because I think, as we said before, all the years of coaching and all these journeys and all of these paths of sort of discovery that we go on as coaches, they're all here to just form stories.
Yeah.
And you know, the biggest, you know, what's one of the biggest producing industries in the world? It's the fucking movie industry, because it enriches people. Whether I'm a massive fan of movies, like that's my switch off. You know, I'll put a movie on every day in the evening. I'll put, no matter what it is, I'll just put it on. And it's just that story of the hero, it's the romance of it all, it's the what you always find, like that journey, I listened to Sylvester Stallone talk about it, for me it's very true to like performance. It's kind of like you've got the quick rise to success, like the underdog to success, which like take for instance Rocky, right? So you've got him, it's the underdog story, and I'm thinking here as well about those kids on the council estate and reducing the antisocial behaviour. So you've got this kid, you've got Rocky, gets his shot at the title, he gets his title, so it's a quick rise to success. And within that, then you're thinking like real quick gains of skill acquisition. So you get that real burst of energy because you're now the champ, you've mastered this passing drill, you've mastered this exercise, whatever. But then that plateaus and the next challenge is in. He then, Rocky III turns around, he gets knocked on his ass by Clubber Lang, Mr. T. And he's got to regroup and he's got to go back to his roots and he's got to find something within him for the reason why he started in the first place. And then, you know, we've all seen the rest of the Rocky films, but it's just repeating now with the Creed films. But that whole journey and that process of why people are doing what they're doing, and that you said, the how stays the same. It's the implementation on all those, and like, yeah, it's just quite a really fortunate process to be able to work with people and work with developing these unique different skill sets of obviously language, communication. But what I wanted to ask you about, you know, this storytelling and these elements, it's kind of when you were on that HITS program, because you get a lot of coaches that are coaching at the professional level that have never had to negotiate with someone why to do what they do. They walk in, they go, you're a professional rugby player, here's your coach, go. How did you go about inspiring those kids? And also, were they just placed there, or did you have to go and say, do you want to come and try rugby?
Yeah, it was one of those where you had to encourage them,
yeah,
to get to that little area,
yeah,
first and foremost. Remember, we're talking about these sessions. For instance, one of the sessions that just stands out in my mind was on a Friday evening.
Yeah.
So what do young people want to do on a Friday evening? The last thing they want to do, they want to be in that play area where they kick a rugby ball or football about, whatever they. But the biggest thing for me was, and this is the big thing in coaching at the minute as well, and I think a lot of coaches, we all can be better at this. So you talk about stories shape behavior.
Yeah.
So you got to figure out, as a coach, we got to figure out what that individual story is, what triggers, what's the intrinsic or the internal motivations to get them there. And once you've got them, that is the time then to start going. Something I call it coaching beyond the game.
Yep.
It's when you really start getting to know your people, and it's subtle conversations you have with these individuals. And it's sometimes just praising what they're doing really well there. And it might just be me turning up on a Friday evening, and they already playing. So what's the common thing in the estates? They love playing football.
Yeah.
So they're already playing a game. So me coming and go, hey, fellas, do you want to play rugby?
Yeah.
That's not the language they normally talk. So it's me getting involved within that football game, and then start using that to break those barriers down. So, and then starting having those type of conversations, how's things going at school? What's the parents doing? What do you like to do? So I've got these, I call them the magic eggs.
Yeah.
On these magic eggs, I've got, and I use this in professional environment now as well. I always carry them with me. I've got, why do you play?
Yeah.
That's one of the questions. Interesting fact, true or false. Those three questions alone create conversations. So I just chuck that in. Look at the magic egg. Go, interesting fact. And I go, tell me something interesting about you.
Yeah.
Could be anything. So, and then you get some cool information about their story. You got to figure out. So for me, the biggest thing for me to break things down and really understand what the needs is for those young people is to understand that their story.
Mm.
What motivates them to have bad behavior, but also what motivates them to help other people.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good examples where someone just go and help one of the old ladies across the road or something like that. That is powerful bits of ammunition that you can use with those type of individuals, for instance. Now, in a professional setting, that should be the easy stuff. However, it's not the easy stuff, because if you look at mental health issues in professional sport, it's quite high up on the radar.
Yeah.
But for me, it's about you got to connect with people individually. So we got to coach individuals. We got to build better relationships. We got to understand their story a little more. And once you've got that trust and that type of connection, people will open up differently to you. To go back to your question, for me on that Hitch program, it was never about rugby.
Yeah.
The rugby ball was just getting us there.
Yeah.
But I knew that also at the time I still have aspirations to be a world-class coach. What that definition is, I don't know what that definition is yet. But hopefully one day I could tell you when I retire.
Yeah.
But it was just unlocking that human potential, and it's digging a little deeper. So sometimes we're so fixated on rugby.
Yeah.
So we got to understand that story, because once we understand that story, that's when we unlock human potential, and that's when we make people better. So that's always my way. I look at it as, yes, I'm a rugby coach,
yep.
But there's more to the game.
Yeah.
There's more to the game, and it's about that individual connection. And once I've got that connection with people, it's difficult sometimes. Sometimes you have to give more. Sometimes you have to ask more. But that's how we start understanding our team and our group and our people. And then you get a buy-in. So those sessions, for instance, those HIT sessions was always full on a Friday night, because they designed their games. I can put up some cool games. I turn that the football game into a bit of football, a bit of rugby, and then we kick it into the hoop.
Yeah.
For multiple points, and then we come up with different type of stuff. I learned a hell of a lot as a coach, but probably the biggest lesson is how I can get really under the crux of understanding humans a little better.
Are there any because I have like kids and people that I've coached throughout my career, is there anyone in particular that you can recall? Like, there's one little kid from that program, or one person in your early coaching there's a moment that you realised something with them, the things that you're talking about now. Is there anyone in particular?
There's a number of individuals. I probably won't highlight their names, but there's a number of guys who actually, the good thing was I had to do references for college.
Oh wow!
College after school. Yeah. Now these guys were close to.
Yeah.
To the wrong side,
yeah.
The gangs and all those type of stuff. So, there's a couple of guys who stand out. And with some of those guys, probably not as in conversation as much as I used to be, because obviously I had to move on.
Definitely
in terms of from that side, from the HITS program. But then I did another cool thing with Harlequins. I ran the Inner London program. So where we basically, it's state school kids who don't play any rugby at school, basically. They come into this program and we try and turn them into top-end athletes. So in my time there, I produced my first professional rugby player through that program. He's currently actually playing at Leeds. I had in that program as well, the guy that I still talk to quite a fair bit, who, when I come across him, he was involved in a children's home. So he was living there. He's now quite a very mature young man. Plays at Old Altamians at the minute. Nathan Thomas. He wouldn't mind me mentioning his name, because he's a role model for so many of those young guys who were on the wrong side of things, flipped his life completely around. And in South Africa, I was involved. I got a bit of passion for this side of stuff
because
I was involved with the programs in South Africa as well. We produced a number of top-end young players in South Africa that went through scholarships. And at the minute, my brother is running, we call it Beat a Difference, big foundation in South Africa where we've got a young lad at the minute who's so my brother's doing a great job. I support around an ambassador type of role at the minute, but we've got a young lad who's with the South African Rugby Academy at the minute, just gone in as a professional there. And then we've got three different parts: the professional rugby, the education, and serving the community, where we give food to hundreds of people in the Cape Town region and support schools, disadvantaged schools, and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, there's a number of these people that that just made the journey even more special along the way. But then again, you don't do it for these type of case studies, but it's just what the power of the game can do to be able to sort of use my abilities as a coach to try and unlock that human potential.
Well, mate, you have my admiration. And I think it's important, like, that because someone said to me the other day, like, "Oh, you don't work in a professional rugby club anymore." And I was like, "No, I don't." It's like, "How's that?" And it's like, "Well, it's okay, because it's not about professional badges, it's about elite practice."
And, yeah.
And so, you know, when I worked at Wasps, I'd grown up supporting Wasps. I wanted to play for Wasps and end up coaching in the Wasps first team. And that was incredible, because I'd kind of didn't realise my dream as a professional player, but I was there. I was in the club that I'd grown up supporting, and then I moved on from there. And then I moved to another club, and where the badge didn't mean as much to me, because it wasn't my team that I'd watched on the TV, and Josh Lucy played for my home rugby club and stuff like that. It was something different. And so what I did, it's very fortunate to lead me to this position now, is that badge became something very important to me, because I made it important because of the work I was doing. And so, like, now I'm not there, and I've realised it's not about the badge. There's never been about the badge. It was the badge that was inspiring me to do the work. So I just got my logo printed on my T-shirt, just to fulfil that bit for me. It's about having that elite practice. And like you said, with, you know, obviously there's the ego side of it, where we want to coach at the highest level, because it's on TV, it's under the big stage, it's where, you know, the pinnacle of the sport is. But what about the pinnacle for that one person that's playing National League? What about the pinnacle for whatever context you want to put it through? You are their elite coach, and being able to do that is obviously something that I'm realizing and working with a lot at the moment.
Yeah.
It's huge, and it ties back into the how, the why, the engagement, the stories, and being able to understand them on that individual level. Because the guy that goes to work at 9 o'clock in the morning and finishes at 5 has got to be out on the field by 7 to train for 2 hours is a completely different beast to the guy that rolls in for breakfast at 7:30 and gets a massage and then does his units, do you know? And I think that your story, I love it, and I love what you've been through. It's more, it feels like more like my story as an S&C coach, coaching people in my shed in my back garden, and didn't have a fucking clue what I was doing, but like just sharpening that blade all the time. And I heard, so like the samurai sword and the Japanese, they're awesome. And like my bounce around with all different things. I told you there's no structure to this conversation. Yeah,
you don't like structure anyway.
Yeah. So I'm sitting here thinking, you always bring it back to the coaching process, or just what the coaching process is in life more than anything. But like the samurai sword, the handle's made by someone that's wrapped by someone else. And then you've got a different guy that makes the case. And you've got a different guy that, one stone that sharpens the tip of the blade, another stone that sharpens the middle of the blade. So you have like 5 or 6 different facets that come together to produce the katana, like the most powerful sword ever to be. And to me, that's like hugely coaching related, and also like the, what you call it, like the split personality disorder of sport and of the game. It's kind of what tool are you using to pick these things out at the right point, versus that person, versus that time of year, versus what the goal is for that session. And I think of that just from a physical standpoint, let alone a tactical rugby coaching standpoint.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Yeah. So it comes back to understanding those stories.
Yeah.
So understanding the individual needs for particular stuff, but also understanding your team in that particular moment. Because if you look at team one, you select team one. Team two is going to be totally different. Yeah. Team three is going to be totally different. So the shape of your team constantly, the shape and the kind of dynamics and everything constantly changes. Your delivery style will never change. You can adapt and amend, but your how and your why you coach will always stay sort of true to that. But it comes down to those particular people within your team and how you're gonna try and get the best out of them. I always use an analogy of do you like drinking coffee?
Yes. So I'm a strength coach, because I fucking do.
So have you ever sat down and thought about where your coffee comes from?
No, not really.
So it's a powerful one when you sit down, because then we go, it goes back to understanding our individuals a little better. I sat in a team meeting once, and one of the coaches said, we need to try and get more energy and stuff into the group of players at the minute. And I was thinking, have we ever thought of bringing whatever their world looks like to them to try and rejuvenate their level of energy? So there's loads of different things you can then do to try and, well, whatever their world is, we gotta make a relationship with that to try and get the best out of our people. You don't want to label learning styles. I think we need to look at multiple ways of, because if I go to you, Sam, you're just a visual learner.
Yeah.
Your story is going to be based on that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm actually a visual learner. However, hey, did you try and use the other style yet?
Yeah.
So anyway, we're quite quick as coaches to go and label things in terms of how we coach. So yeah, if we just start, so my view is, if I can look at the world differently, if I can see what others don't see, then I might be in with a shout.
Yeah.
So if I can then start getting my teams to look at things differently, we might start seeing the game differently. We might see that particular moment differently. So we got to think differently about what we deliver.
And you're kind of filling the gaps, and reshaping. It's like Inception, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Because do you think, as coaches, we like to... someone I spoke to, a good friend of mine, rugby coach, he was with the Middlesex RDO, Tyrone Sterry. You may have come across him.
Yeah, I've come across him.
He used to coach me when I was a kid. I've known him since I was 13. And he said, like, it's really interesting. So I asked him, what's your opinion of S&C coaches and coaching? And obviously you've got the art and the science of it all. And he says he said to me, it was quite interesting, made me think a lot. He was like, Sam, the S&C coach has the power of academic knowledge behind them, where the rugby coach doesn't. Yes, there's lots of coaching literature, but you are directly impacting that human being. And whilst we believe as S&C coaches, like, you play into the ego of shaving off sprint times, of putting the numbers on the people's bar, improving their power and stuff like that. But as the rugby coach, you change their ability to manipulate the chaos and achieve the real passionate outcome for them. Because as a professional athlete, if speed is part of their game, then it's only half of the vehicle to the success. Unless they're a 100-meter sprinter, as opposed to a winger, speed is a huge important part of the game, but they got to catch the ball first. And we all know wingers that can't catch a ball, but they can run like shit off a shovel. But it was really profound, and it just, I was like, wow, like I never really thought of it that way, and it was really interesting for a rugby coach to say that. And the way that I've started to think about S&C coaching has changed in a week from that conversation. Massively, because you've always got to think, you plan from the outcome and go backwards, but how often do we really relate to the outcome in the weight room? Yes, you plan from the weight room to the field, and you have your stream and sequence of exercises that general to specific, but how often are you informing your player from big picture to little picture, from little picture to big picture? What does the hip work in the gym, what does that mean to the hip work on the field, to the cut in the 2v1 and the manipulation of skill? How does that blend in a lot better? It's become hugely important. It's something, because I thought we had this in the thing, I wanted to say that to you and like understand, like, what do you feel from, like, how, what do you feel as a rugby coach that S&C coaches could do better to help rugby coaches?
So my view would, and I'm quite lucky, I've worked with obviously quite a range of different type of S&C guys. The S&C guys I've worked with is probably guys who think about the game.
Yeah.
So they are not thinking about a silo approach. So they're not thinking about, I have to be in the gym and I have to get this guy squatting and all the stuff you guys do over there. I need to think about how I can make this chap a better rugby player, or this girl a better rugby player. So those are the best guys I've worked with. Think about that area. So for young coaches, young S&C guys, so I'm working with a young chap at the minute. Actually, you probably come across Jonas Mikalsius. He's so he used to be my big winger. I called him my Lithuanian prodigy. So knee and sort of nerve damage and all sorts. So he was a big part of my team at Lithuania when I coached the Lithuanian sevens team. And
he's a beast, man.
He's a beast. So he went to Hartbury University, got a degree, and then we managed to get him into Harlequins, signed a 3-year contract, which he was very nervous about signing anyway, ended up signing the contract, and then he had that horrific knee injury. So he... At the minute, he can't play, so he's out of professional rugby, but he had this S&C stuff. So I'm coaching a grassroots team in Chiswick at the minute, Sea Stags. Again, extra reps under the belt, and I'm learning some tough lessons with some grown adult men who knows better. So I'm learning some tough lessons there. But I've got Jonas in, who's basically fresh off the boat. So he's got his perception of S&C, warm up in silo and this in silo and this in silo. So I'm challenging him. So last night I had a cool conversation. And I do this deliberately, purely because it's been done deliberately quite a fair bit with me. He was setting up his warm up stuff, and I go, this is what I want you to do. just as he's about to start. I don't want any of those drill stuff. Can you find a way to make it an exciting game? Or can you just play with it and see what you can come up with? He's like, I've got no time. Hey, don't worry, you'll be fine. Just have a gamble and go. So for him, for instance, so he's in a space where it's just about S&C, the movement, the warm up. Everything is very much in a silo approach. So you got to think about what the game requires. It's the same for me as a rugby coach. I have to think about the game. How close to the game is it? And if you get that relationship better, So then you might think differently about how you deliver your in gym S&C stuff, because there's nothing wrong with a playful approach in the gym,
because
people will think differently. Yeah. It will engage their decision making. It will engage their self awareness, self organization. So they're just thinking differently. So my biggest advice to these guys were the game.
Yeah.
How close to the game can you get, and is everything aligned to making this guy not a better athlete per se? Because once we go athletic, we always think in a linear way.
Yes.
So how do we get this guy to be the best rugby player? And then alongside there, you all the soft skills that's required to make him a better individual. But yeah, so my biggest advice would be how they think about more about the game, to take their movement skills to a near level, because with the movement skills you then go into perception, action, and all those little high quality technical educational jargon that I sometimes don't understand. Then we've got rugby guys who's moving better, which will improve their decision making in the long run. So number one for me would be think about the game. The game's the most important thing, and where can we get our bang for our buck in terms of that.
That's cool, man. That's good. It's nice to hear that. I was very fortunate to spend a year working in track and field as well, and that's where, you know, the event, the training is the event, and the event is the training, and that was huge for me in the development of, especially in my time at Ealing. Like I was able to make some real good gains with the guys. Like they had their warm-ups, and it was like that's how you prepare. Just get ready. This is your warm-up. Like do that. Get out, get it done. And then I'd come out to training, and all my guys, they'd be doing all their warm-ups, because they knew, like, that was just that bit. That wasn't, and then I entered in, and then we used to play variations of American football where you'd have like 1v1 attack and defense. You'd have your kickers under the post, and you'd have to beat your defender, and the kicker would have to place the kick pass and stuff like that. And then we'd play like Indiana Jones, like where you're running through things and then start seeing that whole thing. And you can't beat Bulldog.
There's so many. I mean, for you, because you're an S&C coach, you're not allowed to have fun, are you?
No.
So you got to be careful.
Yes.
No, but look, on all seriousness, there's so many cool stuff you can do within. So if you think about, if you go, I'm not a mathematician, but if you got 10 minutes to warm up in a professional environment, and you train Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, that is a lot of 10 minutes by the end of the season. So how do you maximize learning? How do we maximize movement skills within that? Or do we have just a linear approach of, you're the S&C coach, you've got 10 minutes there, but what's the level of decision making? I've seen firsthand in top end clubs where the S&C coaches just do the S&C.
Yeah.
Their warm up. The other thing we do quite a fair bit is, can you play a few games, guys?
Yeah.
So which is fine, because we want to play. Yeah. However, have I asked you to do a game or an activity? So there's a difference. Are we doing activities or we get a game? Because at the moment we do an activity, there's no intention.
Yes.
And if there's no intention in the session, we then don't get to that big picture stuff in terms of what we want to achieve. So if say we're doing a session, you're doing totally different in your warm-up versus what the intention is from the session, we almost go, so when do we start the session? Did we start the session 15 minutes ago when Sam started, or is the session starting now? So that's having that clear understanding. What's the intention now, Sam? Can you design something that So with our practice design, you've got 10 minutes, but can you design something that's in relation to the attack space we're going to work on? Mm-hmm. So what sort of movement is required to do that?
Yeah, that's cool. So as a rugby coach, like, what would you say, you're in a professional environment, like, what would your week look like preparing a player from a Saturday to Saturday turnaround?
In a 15s context, or they'll go, say it's Saturday game, they'll most likely do their recovery type of stuff on a Monday morning, or sometimes people have to come in on a Sunday. You're probably looking at your tactical periodization to almost go fairly low to a little medium to a quite a hard type of session in the middle of the week, to then drop it down, back down again towards the back end of the week to get the guys match ready. But then you want to look at, so I've been playing around with this thing that I call a skill warm-up.
Yeah.
So like a skill-based warm-up, and how do we interlink the two?
Yeah.
Whether that is the S&C guy working with... just jumping again, I think we all label each other S&C coach, rugby coach, but we're just coaching people. That's once we get that terminology right, we might coach better as well. But yeah, if we get sort of with the skill warm up, what type of movement? So if I want to do some, one of my principles is always beat the man. So if I want to do some beat the man stuff with the ball, I'm going to be reliant on you. If I want to have the best attacking team,
yeah,
I'm going to be so reliant on my strength and conditioning coaches, because you guys are the experts in moving. I'm the expert in understanding how to manipulate the opposition's body position to jump in. But yeah, so it's how you make each other better to go. I would love to get to a level where one of my S&C coaches would go, have you noticed that in that guy in the opposition? He always does this with his body when he's in defense.
Yeah.
Man, how cool is that? So now you're looking at the game. You're looking at the game differently.
Yeah.
Because you can pick up triggers that requires your players to move better. Because in an S&C world, it's just about movement.
Yeah.
It's movement. So you can see these. Mm. So why don't we go with that level of information and go, look, Warren, this is what I'm seeing in second, third phase when we go into that level of play. So you might want to think about how we can break that down.
Mate, it's good. I like it. Like,
again, it's the game, isn't it? What's the game telling us? But sometimes I feel some guys are so fixated on the numbers and the stuff. I'm going, I don't even know what that means, mate.
Yeah, I think as well with the strength and conditioning side of things, I feel like there is an accepted order of like progressing people and progressing through movement for safety reasons, that you don't want to give chemotherapy
to
someone with a cold. But at the same time, like I do it because obviously I still play and I've coached at a high level. I sometimes sit there and I'm like, I don't want to fucking do this. Like, I'm like, and we're going through these progressions that I sort of had thought of. I used a lot of my club stuff that I was doing some of the S&C with as a, like a testing ground for the stuff I do with the pro guys. And just like in the way that you tweak things. And I'm going through it and I'm like, it's not right. It's not right. It's not giving me what I need. It's not giving me what I want. If I'm not motivated, there's no intention, like you said, then I'm not going to do it. And I had a couple of really good conversations with some players actually about this sort of stuff, and about how, you remember, like when you come off your break and you've been off for ages and you get back into your first couple of sessions of training, and you're just fucking zipping balls left, right and centre, nothing's going down, it's just free, you know, you're playing, like, for me, a winger, like, my hands are not my skill, they're not my trait, but, like, for me, like, I'd be fizzing balls all over the place, and I spoke to, you know, Grayson Hart?
Yeah.
So we were talking about it, and he was like, yeah, like, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but we basically both agreed that as soon as, like, you get back in and you're just relaxed, the environment's relaxed, there's no pressure, if you're in to call it that, which then makes you tight, which makes you tense, and you stop exploring, and you stop enjoying, and it stops becoming free, because there's a game on Saturday, and we've got to prepare, we've got to go through all of our starters, we've got to go through our set piece, because there's a game on Saturday, and there's another game the following Saturday, and if we don't get it right in training, we're not going to get it right, and then all of a sudden you've got 20 balls down.
Yeah, it just goes back to the how safe is your environment? Is your environment safe enough for people to explore and express themselves? I got this thing that I call, so my model that I work off, I call it the 4D, my 4D deliberate play model that's underpinned by decision making. And it's like in sort of four zones, I put it. So the free zone, where free informal play, that's the informal learning happens there, where, for an example, I might just go, Sam, you've got 5 minutes. So whatever you do in that 5 minutes, it's up to you. You'd be surprised how I had a session the other day with the England Sevens kickers, and I said 5 minutes, guys, to get yourselves ready for when I intervene or start the session. I picked up two cool little ideas that I developed based on what they were doing, their own version of little games and warm-ups and blah, blah, blah. So that's the free side. That's your backyard style. That's the side where you got that free flowing motion going. And then it's your game zone. Obviously, you know where it's constrained to afford in that area. Skill zone, always in context.
Yeah.
And then drill zone, where a lot of coaches is afraid to go in that zone. I comfortably go in that, because it's about coaching the individual process and then turning drills into competitive fun games while you're working with an individual. Yeah. There's some ways you can do that. You just need to look at it differently. So that's sort of my 4D deliberate model. And in that model, because it's underpinned by decision-making, you are free to explore and express yourself. So I'd like to think I'm creating a safe environment for people to bring their individual strengths to the party and spice it up a little bit. Now, within that, you sometimes have to give guidance. So you have to jump up and down that continuum, whether to give them clear structure and direction and whether to go very chaotic. Yeah. And then it's a good balance. You find a good blend with that. But for me, I think most of the time in every team I've coached so far, and based on the evidence and the feedback and everything, that's a dynamic system that allows decision making. So it gives people the freedom to go and express themselves. And it just goes to your whatever your environment. If your environment is an environment where this needs to happen this way, then you don't get the best out of people. That's my opinion. But if you give people the opportunity to explore and express themselves within the framework, you're not going to always get it right, but you would still within that framework, that's going to give you that relax. You know what? I can actually, if shit hits the fan, he's backing me 100% on this one. It's risk and reward. Sometimes you're going to lose games. Sometimes you're going to win games. But if you're working with young people, it's a brilliant tool. You just go. Yeah. Many times the under-18s ask me this year at Harlequins, what's the score? I go, I don't know, mate.
Yeah.
I don't know what the score is. Why don't you go score some more tries?
Yeah, exactly.
Scoring tries. That's all you need to think about.
Yeah.
But yeah, they want to win because they're associating winning with success. Yes. So you can understand that. But for me, it's always, you learn some pretty tough lessons in in those tough losses sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of gives you an overview of how I see environments. And look, you go, you look at, there's a nice quote the other day that I read where when a flower dies, we always look at the flower. Perhaps we need to look at the environment where that flower dies in. And that might help you with the way we look at things.
Yeah, that's fucking big. Yeah. Because sometimes a player is just not cut out for the game, is he?
It's always too small, or he's never going to play professional rugby, or he's this. Look, we can all see in the future.
Yeah.
So, but if it's about, so it goes back to why you do what you do. So my why is clear. I want to inspire and develop people by using my abilities as a coach to maximize human potential. That's why, ultimately, why I coach. And I'm going to do the utmost to try and find ways to upskill myself and make myself better as a coach, so I can give whichever athlete I work with, whether it's professional, grassroots, or a young person, to unlock that level of potential within that person. So yeah, that's sort of how I look at it. And on top of that, we're gonna play some pretty cool stuff with whatever sport we coach in.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, man. I think that, mate, that is the perfect way to sign off, because that is, that's class. I'm very, very pleased. But listen, mate, it's been absolutely fantastic. We've just done an hour, so.
Brilliant, yeah. I love the conversation. I enjoy it. And hopefully people will get a little bit from what they can take away.
Mate, absolutely. You know, you made some real sound points there, from just a whole coaching context, a person context, and also applying it back in and relating the two disciplines to each other. So it's been fantastic. And to hear the way that you spoke about, you know, the different levels and experiences and people that you've coached within that's built your models, it's invaluable. It's invaluable to coaches listening. So, you know, you've got a lot to offer there, man. So your Instagram is Coaching for Potential?
Yeah, so it's at WA Coaching for Potential. So on there, I want to give as much as I can and
you
share.
You wear a GoPro, don't you?
But I like to wear the GoPro, because you know why I like to wear the GoPro, and this is another golden nugget for some coaches, is it upskills me as a coach, so I listen to my language I'm using. So it's a good way to review and reflect on your sessions. Am I using the right language? Am I asking the right questions? What is my interactions like? And I also record some pretty cool footage from it as well. And then most importantly, the behavior of the young people you're interacting with, or the adults, because that will give you there's no better external feedback than someone standing with his arms crossed going, what is this idiot talking about? So you got to find a different way of getting that message across.
Yeah, perfect, man.
Yeah.